Welcome to We Love No Other, the Illini podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I am Robert, and for this podcast, I'm going to do things a little differently. I don't have a guest this week. This is going to be a mailbag podcast. I have been going through my spring mailbag questions that a lot of you have emailed to me and a couple on Twitter and other such ways. And I've gotten to this point where I think I have 26 questions left, and I'd love to get to them all. And I figured maybe a good way to do that is to just go through them and record them instead of typing them out. And maybe I can knock out 10, 15 questions here tonight and post it as a podcast, and then maybe the rest of this week get to the rest of the questions, because I really want to get to the rest of the questions, because I like that you guys send me so many questions, and I just said the word questions 11 times. So, straight to it, straight to the questions, and I'll read them, and then I'll go through them. So here's the first question. I apologize, I didn't write down the names of who wrote the questions. I try and do that on the blog side when I'm answering, just so you can see your name, see your question or whatever. I didn't write that down here, so hope you hear your question. I hope people listen to this and get to the question. Stop saying question and just start reading. Do Paul James, Joe Fotu, and Tico Powell look ready for quality, and by that I mean competitive, Big Ten minutes this year? Let me go one by one. Paul James, maybe not. I mean, he looked good in the spring game, just in a rushing sense. I think he had 4 tackles for loss, like 2 sacks and 2 tackles for loss. So that was very promising. But he's still in his first year of college football. He was there for a little bit of Camp Randtul last year, and then there were the academic issues, and he wasn't in school last fall. And then he re-enrolled in January, and this was his first spring. So really, this fall will kind of be his first year of college football. And in a first year of college football, I'd say, what, 90%, 95% of players just aren't ready just yet. So for Paul James, I'm going to say he's a year or two away, just because that's the default. We might need him. We might need to even try out Leo and see if he can play on the other side. But I don't think, to your question, is he ready for quality Big Ten minutes this year? Probably not. Joe Fotu, maybe. They were sliding him around this spring. They played him some at strong side end, some 3 technique tackle. I don't know where he's going to end up. He looked to me, and again, this is just a few viewings, he looked to me pretty solid against the run, but maybe he doesn't have the best pass rushing skills. So to me, that screams, you know, put a little bulk on him and move him into defensive, defensive tackle. Maybe see he can use some bull rush moves and collapse the pocket. Maybe he's not going to beat an offensive lineman or the quarterback, but, you know, maybe he can be that guy. Then, if he is a run-stuffing kind of guy, can you use him in running situations as a strong side defensive end to hold the edge that maybe we don't have with some of our pass rusher guys? So maybe he's that guy. Maybe he's a run, not so much a fire plug run stuffer like a big nose guard, but maybe he can be that kind of run defense guy that we really sorely lacked last year. Tico Powell, yes, I think he's ready for competitive Big Ten minutes this year. This is his third year. It still kind of sucks that we couldn't redshirt him 3 years ago. 2 years ago, I guess it is. He was just, you know, we needed the bodies. We had to play him. Halfway through the season, we pulled his red shirt and played him. We just had to put somebody out there. So it kind of stinks that he lost a year there, but it is what it is. So now he's a junior, should be a red shirt sophomore. I think he's ready. I think in his third year, he's going to be pretty solid. I think next year, in 2015, he's going to be really good. He really, really got better from game 1 to game 12 last year. This spring, he had a foot issue. I think he had surgery on his foot maybe back in January, and he was still coming back from it. So he really wasn't full go into maybe the last week of spring ball. So you kind of, it's hard to say whether he was there yet or, you know, whether he's all the way back. But for Tico, yes, I think he is ready for competitive Big Ten minutes. Okay, let's go to the next question. Hope I can read these quickly. One of the recurring themes of your blog is the negative effect of the high attrition rates of Zook-era recruits, which has been followed by very stable but overall less heralded recruits during the Beckman era. My question may take a bit of research, but can you point to other teams who were able to make the turnaround with a Beckman-like approach? Can you correlate low attrition to on-field success with under-recruited guys? I thought Beckman was an absolute disaster after the 2012 year, but he has grown on me ever since. I would like to see him succeed. I just fear he doesn't have quite enough Big Ten caliber talent to really compete, especially if key players get injured. Very fair question. Yes, it would take research. Yes, I'm firing through a bunch of mailbag questions tonight, so it's going to be difficult to do that research. So this is just going to be top of my head stuff. But the first one that comes to mind of other teams that made, a turnaround with what you're calling a Beckman-like approach, with the less heralded recruits, but keep everybody in the program and keep the same coaches around and stability, is Jerry Kill. That's what he's done at Northern Illinois, and that's what he's done at Minnesota. He keeps the same exact coaches with him, the same exact schemes. He recruits to those. He does the same thing over and over, and he recruits guys that he can keep in school and train and redshirt and go 5 years and that type of thing. So that's probably the biggest name. Another name that jumps out to me is Gary Pinkel at Miznaz. I can't say Mizzou anymore. It's just Miznaz to me. Pinkel did the same thing. Came from Toledo, got to Mizzou. First 2 years were really bad, but he installed this system and just kept the same offense, tweaked it a little bit when Christensen left, but kept the same offense, the same defense, and just tried to recruit players. Now, they've moved to the SEC, and now even before the move to the SEC, once they had those great years under Chase Daniel and things like that, they started to get away from that we're recruiting the solid four-year guy thing. And they started taking gambles on some players that had maybe some, you know, question marks around them during recruiting and things like that. And as we've seen in the last few years, Mizzou's been dealing with some of those things. But overall, I think Pinkel did that type of thing. There was no stability under Larry Smith at Miznaz. And, you know, he brought in and said, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to find four-year players, and we're going to play these systems, and we're going to do that same thing. So there are a lot of other examples, how Riley built Oregon State back, how, you know, other coaches have been able to, like, okay, maybe it's not, gosh, you probably have to look at Pat Fitzgerald. He did the same thing at Northwestern, that he said, we're going to keep guys in school, and we're going to play, have a lot of fifth-year seniors, and we're going to graduate classes of 22 people and not classes of 12 people, and we'll just do that type of thing. And he's done it without Big Ten caliber. What do they have, 3 NFL players the last 5-6 years? You know, Northwestern has not done it with top-end talent. Now, they've also scheduled themselves wins, but that's another issue and another podcast. So, yes, I agree that 2012 was a disaster. I agree that Beckman's hire of Gonzalez and Beatty really set him back quite a bit in not only recruiting, but, you know, you start with a 2-10 season and then you change the offense immediately. You're already, you know, if you're trying to build that consistently, you're already backwards after 12 months. But yes, that seems to be his plan, is to get 4-year and 5-year guys, redshirt them, build up large senior classes who have been in the same system and know what you're trying to do. And beginning this fall, we'll begin to find out. Question 3. Who is the next Illini to be drafted in the NFL? First name that comes to mind, I would say, is Matt LaCosse, mostly because of measurables. He's a legit 6'6", 6'5 and a half, 6'6". Does have some speed, really athletic. When I was in Rantoul last summer, I saw some scouts there. They always wear their hats. I think it was like a Falcon and a Jets scout that just wandered through one day. And they spent a lot of time watching LaCosse. They, I can't remember, was it Chargers? There was a couple scouts there in their NFL hats and just stopping through a college camp to watch. And they spent a lot of time staring at him because on the hoof, as they say, he looks the part of a tight end. He can run. He's pretty athletic, and he's tall, he's got long arms, he's got large hands to catch the ball. He looks the part of an NFL guy. Now, he only had, 25 catches last year, 20, something like that? So he would have to put up a NFL season. He would have to put up the stats that make the NFL guys say, wow, this kid's really good. Now, C.J. Fedorowicz just did that at Iowa. He had so-so stats for his first 3 years. Put up solid stats and was the first pick of the third round last week. So it is possible to do that based on 1 year, but he would have to do that. Other guys, I think Simon Svijanović has a chance. He's progressively got better every year. He really looks the part this year. If he has an outstanding senior season, maybe he gets a look as an offensive lineman, as an NFL offensive lineman. There's other guys. I think, if you go to maybe the junior class, Geronimo Allison really does look the part. Now we're getting into look the part. Jahad Ward, he looks the part. I haven't seen him in an Illini uniform yet. He's not in camp yet. He won't be until August. But he certainly has that size and speed, a high school wide receiver that grew into a college defensive end because he put on 80 pounds in college and kept his speed. That's the kind of guy that NFL teams take a chance on and just say, hey, size, speed, we can make this guy into a player. So maybe there's some chances with some of the JUCO guys for next year. Maybe there's some guys I'm not seeing that will be seniors this fall that maybe have an NFL chance. But overall, like I've been talking about on the blog, it's a big change from the last few years where we had five or six NFL caliber guys each year. Now we just had nobody drafted, and there's really nobody right now that I would say is a surefire shot for next year. Okay, long question for this one. In college football, it seems like most good teams or programs have a solid identity that they're known for nationally. For example, Wisconsin is going to punish you with their giant offensive line and running game. Oregon has their lightning-quick spread offense. Alabama has a dominant defense full of pros, etc. Under Lou Tepper, we had a dominant defense but no offense. Turner had an explosive pro-style offense. Zook had the spread offense, but inconsistent, undisciplined play. And now we're entering the third year of the Beckman era. Are we at the point yet where we know what the identity of a Tim Beckman team is? Off the field, he preaches family, community service, academics. But what about the program on the field? Is it the high-scoring spread offense, or is that the Cubitt identity? Josh Ferguson and Wes Lunt? If Illinois has a better year this year, what's the first thing people will think of nationally who aren't familiar with the program? This is a fantastic question. I could spend an entire podcast just on this question. my first thought, and this is going off of Toledo, and this is going off the number of times that Beckman in interviews will mention Coach Gundy and what he did at Oklahoma State, is I think Beckman believes in a very multiple offense. I think he believes in kind of a coming at you in waves offense. Now, that doesn't fit his background. He was defensive coordinator at Oklahoma State. He was a cornerbacks coach at Ohio State. So he comes from the defensive side, and yes, he has some identity things there. But I think, going by what his Toledo team was like, he likes the concept of an innovative, front-edge, multiple offense, which is part of the reason I think, you know, Bill Cubitt last fall, when asked about two QB systems and when asked about Aaron Bailey playing in the first game, said, hey, I'm not used to it. I usually don't do it. But if it works and we've got multiple players to do multiple things right, I'm okay doing it. Which to me said Beckman's influence in the offense there was, we've got this kid who's pretty good with the ball in his hands. Maybe we use him in certain situations this fall as a true freshman to get him some snaps and maybe give teams a different look. Which is one of the reasons I'm all about the 140 offense, which is my own little thing where Lunt's on the field 70% of the time and Bailey's on the field 70% of the time. 30% as a quarterback and 40% doing whatever else. I think Cubitt and especially Beckman like the idea of a two QB system. That's what Beckman did with Matt Campbell at Toledo. They had a running quarterback and a passing quarterback, and they used Eric Page in 19 different roles, which is, I think, what you're going to see from Josh Ferguson this fall. So I think his identity that he's going for, if it's an offensive identity, is this multiple, will whole, you know, every single play in the playbook is out there, and we're going to slide another quarterback in there, we're going to do this. And I think, you know, Cubitt got a lot of the reputation for that last year, but he was really not like the trick play master when he was at Western Michigan. He was just a balls out, quick pocket passer guy. And he really wasn't, you know, when he was at Stanford as the offensive coordinator, he's in Missouri, he really wasn't this crazy gunslinging, crazy Bill Cubitt guy. So I think a lot of that is maybe the influence of Beckman and Coach Golish and other guys who have come over from Toledo to say, this is kind of our identity. We have these multiple players. Let's be very, very multiple in our offense. Defense, I think he hired Tim Banks because he wants the TFL thing. He wants the tackles for loss. He really hasn't had the horses just yet. But I think he likes the idea of a gambling defense. I don't think he likes the idea of just, you know, going back to some of the early Zook defenses of playing 12 yards off the ball and bend, don't break. I think he wants to be aggressive. So overall, to answer what, if Illinois has a good year, what people are thinking about, I think, and this is a guess based on the both quarterbacks would play, that it would be seen as this multiple offense of a different look every play and different players coming in, and Josh Ferguson is a lead blocker on one play and is the tailback on the next, and then a slot receiver, and then split out, and then he's in the wildcat, and then he throws a pass. I think that's the type of thing that Beckman showed at Toledo and what he showed with Cubitt last year, and I think they'll continue to move things in that direction. So that's my answer for that. Next question. Caleb Day and Clayton Fedulum looked very confused on the first touchdown of the spring game. These are two potential starters. Should we expect a lot of secondary confusion this year? My first answer to that, I'd go to my depth chart, and I have both Day and Fedulum as second stringers. So yes, they are potential starters. I really like Fedulum, the transfer from the D2 school who sat out last year when I did my New Year's Eve post of 10 names to watch for Illinois sports. The football transfer I picked was Fedulum, just because I think he's got some potential. The kid can play. He's my next walk-on obsession. But, you know, this will be his first year, so I'm not exactly sure if he starts. And then Day really looked improved this spring and looked a lot more comfortable at corner, but I'm still not sure he's in front of of Eaton Spence or Viangelo Bentley or even Darius Mosley or Jalen Dunlap. There's a lot of competition there. So it's probably a good thing that if they look confused on the first TD of the spring game, that they're not really like the only options back there. Now, should we expect a lot of secondary confusion this year? The second half of the question, yes, probably. When you look at the depth chart, it's almost all sophomores, some juniors. The only senior is Zane Petty back there, and he's a JUCO transfer. This is only his second year in the defense and second year in the program. So there's no four-year guys, no Kevin Mitchell back there. There's no Vontae Davis at corner. There's no experienced junior or senior that's leading this group. So yes, when you have that, yeah, there's probably going to be some confusion. Again, and I say this a lot, I think they'll be okay. I think it'll be better this year. Maybe get a few more interceptions. Next year is when I think the secondary can be pretty good. You get everyone back except for Petty. And, you know, maybe these guys that are sophomores turning into juniors, they're starting to make that leap. So should we expect confusion from the secondary? Probably. Is it going to be specifically Day and Fedulum that are the issue back there? Maybe, but we'll be rotating heavily. Probably 8, 9, maybe even 10 guys in the secondary. And so hopefully with that, we'll be able to find some kind of mix. Okay, next question. How does the transition to a stronger armed QB alter the offense? More potential for a dangerous deep ball? Does that open up more room out of the backfield for Ferguson? Fewer rollouts, parentheses, albeit with more planned runs if and when we see Bailey under center? a couple things. Yes, Lunt and even Bailey are stronger armed QBs. I'm not exactly sure it's that significant a change from Nathan Shieldhouse, who just threw for 3,200 yards. I'll say it this way. I would take it in a second and go to the bank and cash in my chips, and I would be done in a second if you told me that whoever our starting quarterback is would throw for 3,200 yards this fall. Because I just don't see it. I don't think whoever starts will have a good as year as Shieldhouse had last year. I mean, 3,200 yards is 3,200 yards. Yes, you know, Kitner threw for more than that those years, but with all these receivers gone and a new offense, and, you know, we're looking at two sophomores here, I just don't think somebody's going to throw for 3,200 yards this fall. So, is it nice to have a stronger arm QB? Yes. Did Wes Lunt make some throws on that Chicago scrimmage and even in Springfield, where he puts the ball on the button on the opposite hash with no effort? Yes, absolutely. This kid can throw a football. Tight spiral, effortless release, quick release. Yes, that is a big benefit over what Nathan had physically. But I still don't know if the decision-making is going to be there. I mean, Shieldhouse last year audibled 12 first downs, maybe, you know, where he read the defense at the line of scrimmage on 3rd and 6, backed off, changed the play, and picked up a first down because he was so well experienced reading film and watching defenses that he could read some things and saw where the safety was positioned and audibled to a different play, and we picked up the first down. It was probably more than 12 times he did that last year. Do we get that type of thing? Because yes, you can have big arms. Yes, you can have an experienced line in front of you brings 4 of the 5 starters back and your running game gets going better and Ferguson's clear and everything gets clicking. But is the decision-making going to be there? The decision-making we saw from Shieldhouse last year was pretty outstanding. That's my hesitation to say, you know, do we have more dangerous deep balls? Are things more open for Ferguson? Yes, hopefully all of that takes place. The line's a little better. Lunt has a bigger arm if he's the starter. Bailey has a bigger arm. And we have maybe some more options at receiver to do a few different things, and we start to click. Yes, that's the hope. But right now, I would take it in a second if you told me somebody's going to throw for 3,200 yards. Next question. What is your gut feeling on the defense this year? Will the additional experience mean a big leap forward, or are the losses such as Bates, Brown, and Kennard going to be tougher to overcome than we thought? Can we count on the JUCO D linemen to make an instant impact, or are we just throwing bodies out there and hoping some combination works? Okay, two-part question. I'll go through the first. Are the losses of Bates, Brown, and Kennard going to be tough to overcome? Yes. Are they the smallest losses we've had on defense since 2006? Yes, probably. It's been a long time since we brought this much back. You lost Bates, Brown, and Kennard. And then of the entire two deep, you didn't lose anybody else. And nobody. None of the second stringers. So this is the most experience. I'm not saying talent, but this is the most experience we've brought back, gosh, 15, 20 years maybe? As far as terms of lettermen, people who played on the defense and were part of the rotation last year to this year, this is the most we've brought back in, it has to be 20 years. Does that mean the defense is automatically going to be great? No. Does this defense have a long way to go after last year's statistics? Obviously. Absolutely. But if we're just looking at losses, yes, Brown was the captain of this defense. He was the quarterback of this defense. Big loss. Houston Bates had a better year than people realize, and we don't really have a backup just yet that has stepped forward and said, this is my position, so we could struggle at Leo. Tim Kennard had a great senior season, exactly what you want from a fifth-year senior. So yes, three big players have left, but compare that to the rest of the Big Ten, we lost the least amount of impact, the least everything is gone. We return more than anyone else. So we will see. We will see what that means. We will see if that has an impact collectively, that everybody coming back makes a difference. Can we count on the JUCO D linemen to make an instant impact, or are we just throwing out bodies out there? I think we can. So let's just say between Carroll Phillips, Jihad Ward, and Joe Fotu. Let's say one of them busts. So you're always going to have busts. You're always going to have junior college busts that just aren't ready for big-time football. So I'm just throwing a name out there. Let's say Fotu just can't find the rotation, and Fotu isn't out there. There's maybe one of the bodies we were just throwing at it. I think from the other two, given their offer lists and given the positions of need, maybe we have something there. Maybe, you know, there's a chance Jihad Ward is exactly what this defense needed. We'll see. Haven't laid eyes on him yet. I haven't seen him in a drill. Maybe he's just not there yet. But it's exactly what this defense needed. This defense needed instant impact defensive linemen. It needs Tico Powell and Chunky Clements to grow up really fast. It needs Paul James to grow up really fast. It needs Kenny Nelson to take a big leap forward as a redshirt junior. And it needs some instant impact. And I think there are some there. So we'll see. It's not going to be a top 15 defensive line nationally. We haven't just suddenly fixed all of our problems. But I think there's enough maturity of players getting a year older. And I think there's enough impact from the JUCOs that maybe this defensive line will be decently improved. Next question. Does it seem like Bill Cubitt has more or less of the playbook open as compared to this time last year? Good question. It's hard to answer because this time last year, Bill Cubitt, well, coming out of the spring last year, I think we were all convinced this was going to be a Donovan Young-led power running offense. That's the majority of what we saw in the spring game, even some of the practices. They weren't really throwing it around like they ended up doing in the fall. They were even running with Nathan Shieldhouse a lot. So maybe that was a little bait and switch. Maybe Cuba didn't want to show exactly what he was going to do until the season. maybe it was a slow install and they just started with some of the basic run concepts and did that in the spring and then put in a lot more of the offense in the fall, in summer, in the camp. So maybe that's the way it worked. I would say it seemed like we saw a lot more of the playbook this spring than last spring. Might be a function of that. Might be a function of, hey, we've got this kind of QB and this kind of QB, and we're trying to bring all these new receivers along and fit this, and let's try this, and let's try that, and let's try this. So I would say yes, the playbook is more open than compared to this time last year. Is that just a function of where it was, and maybe the playbook is a little more closed this fall than we saw under Shieldhouse? That's a possibility. But yes, to answer your specific question, yes, we saw a little more playbook this spring. Was there a story behind Houston Bates transferring? Did he not like the direction of the program and the coaching staff? So I'm just going to throw this out here. This is just rumor, but I heard it from a couple sources that the main reason Houston Bates transferred was his girlfriend. His girlfriend goes to Louisiana Tech. He wanted to be close to her. He could transfer and play immediately since he was a fifth-year senior and he was graduating right now. So he could get his undergrad degree, use that John Eakey / Maniscalco, use the whole instant transfer and immediately eligible thing, be close to his girlfriend, and play one more season back home in his state of Louisiana. So I heard that before the transfer stuff came out. I heard that he was going to go be with his girlfriend. When he announced his transfer, they didn't say the school, but I even heard at that time, yeah, it's going to be Louisiana Tech because that's where his girlfriend is, and that's what happened. So the best I can approximate, and some of the things he said on Twitter at the end of the season, like tweeting toward her, I think this was nearly 100% a girlfriend decision. Okay, three more questions. I know you won't do any predictions until August, but on the chance we have a good year and make a bowl, which one do you think would be most realistic? Admit it, you've priced out a couple flights and hotels already, just in case, right? No, I have not priced flights and hotels. In fact, for the first time since 2010, my wife and I just the other day started talking about maybe taking our boys skiing between the holidays. This actually might be before Christmas this year, which may only like knock out the... when is the pizza bowl? Maybe it's like December 26th. Oh, wait, is that even in the rotation anymore? No, it isn't. I'm having a conversation with myself. I'm interviewing me. So yes, I might be gone over the holidays, which I was in 2010 when I went to the Texas Bowl. I couldn't go to the Texas Bowl. I was in a condo in Frisco, Colorado at the time. So maybe that's the magic that I need to do is just go ahead and take this time off, and maybe that will, as soon as I book the flights to Colorado for another ski trip, we'll make a bowl. Which bowl would be most realistic? Gosh, it's so hard to say now because everything switched. You know, I don't think if we do make a bowl, we're in the rotation of those new bowls, like the Holiday Bowl is back in, Pinstripe Bowl, maybe Pinstripe. Maybe Crap Fight Hunger again? Is this the on year for Music City? I can't remember. So maybe we go to Nashville. So, yes, I would answer the lower end of the new Big Ten Bowl rotation, which is maybe Pinstripe Bowl in New York City. Maybe it's Crap Fight Hunger Bowl. Maybe it's that Texas Bowl at the Cotton Bowl. You know, maybe it's something, the Heart of Dallas or whatever they call it. I don't think we're going to, you know, I can't see this team breaking through and being in the Outback Bowl or Citrus or, you know, Cap One or whatever. Or the Gator. Yeah. I'm not going to predict any of that. I would love to just sneak into the whatever bowl on the bottom of the barrel and I would be ecstatic because that would mean, yes, we have a bowl. We can recruit to it, and 2015, you return a lot of players, and then you can start thinking about some of those other bowls. Okay, two more questions. Can Geronimo Allison add enough strength and weight by the fall to fight off defensive backs in the Big Ten? Great question. Yes, he absolutely looked the part this spring. I think I said a couple times, he looks like that Michigan State receiver, that 6'4" guy that always destroys us and has the reach and the height and the length in his arms to go up and get a pass in the corner of the end zone and that type of thing. He looks like a wide receiver. We haven't had a guy like this in a long time. You know, think even back to, gosh, was it Walter Young, the last big, tall, long-armed, go-get-it receiver we've had? So yes, he looks the part, but very wiry, very thin. And I said the same thing about Dude K. Looks great, catching a lot of passes, really, really shows a lot of potential, but okay, we're going to run the ball 50% of the time. Can he block a Big Ten safety? Can Allison go downfield and hold the corner with the cornerback so that Ferguson is sprung to the edge? It's a lot more to play in wide receiver than just go jump up and catch the ball in the corner of the end zone. And we had some pretty good blocking from wide receivers last year. You know, guys like Spencer Harris and Miles Osei, we didn't have the biggest receiving stats, but we got some pretty solid, you watch tape, we got some pretty solid downfield blocking. So that's a question. Who's our go-to guys that we know we can count on blocking from the wide receiver position? Or are we just letting people through and we're not going to have a run over 6 yards because the secondary is going to be there immediately because we're not blocking anybody? So it's going to be a question. That's probably my biggest concern with GMO, is that he has that strength and that he can be not only a wide receiver but a blocker. Or even get off the line with a physical defensive back. So yes, that's a concern. Final question of the night. Robert, thanks for all you do, specifically for the inside view that you allow folks like myself who live far away from our beloved. Thanks to your wife from all of us too. Yes, she's amazing. I know a lot of questions are going to come to you about the quarterbacks, tight ends, and such. My question is more about you and your experience. You were kind of living my dream, not that I would want to write about it per se, with being at practices, press conferences, games, etc. What is that like for you? Do you get picked on by the paid guys who cover the team? Is Lauren Tate threatening you with swirlies, or do these guys accept you as one of their own? How do the coaches and players treat you? Do you have any favorites? How has the experience changed with the new coaches and athletic director coming in? Secondly, what do you need from us? We who follow you appreciate your efforts very much. Do you need more money, feedback, encouragement, etc.? Keep up the good work. Court in Connecticut. Thank you, Court. I appreciate the kind words. What do I need from you? We'll lay that out again this summer. Subscribers make this whole thing go. It's very, very nice for me to travel to Chicago to cover that practice or travel to Springfield and stay in a hotel and know that I don't have to tell my wife, hey, I spent $300 covering a team for my fake career. So yes, the subscribers make this whole thing work. So to all of you subscribers, thank you very much. You'll be up for renewals, I guess, in August and September, and it'll be very important going forward for the site that you continue with us, and really appreciate it because, again, it just gets really hard to do it financially if we don't have any money coming in from anything else. So we'll get to that this summer. We'll talk about that this summer. I will answer your questions about what it's like on the sidelines. Because I've told some people this, but maybe some people don't know. So when I first started doing this, I actually asked for a press pass and was denied because the school didn't know who I was. And I don't fault them in any way. They have a policy. They can't just give a press pass to any guy who said, hey, I started a website, can I have a press pass? You know, they need to vet you a little bit, and I totally understood that. So for the first few years, I would go to Rantoul and just kind of cover the team from over here, and the reporters are covering the team from over there. After a while, they did allow me to started with Rantoul. They allowed me to do some post-practice interviews. They followed my site, and when I joined Illini Board, they gave me a full credential. They were aware of Brumby. They were aware of the website and what he had built in the early 2000s. and kind of his credibility led to me being able to get a press pass for both football and basketball. So that was been a huge thing of joining Illini board and being able to have a full media press pass and everything else has been fantastic. How do I get picked on? Does Lorne give me swirlies? I will answer that. It's kind of cool. Some people don't know this, but when I was in college, when I was at Illinois, I had a part-time job in the sports department at the News Gazette. I started as a score taker, and then I moved up to agate shooter, which is the guy who lays out the scoreboard page. And I would do that in the middle of the night when I was, you know, I'd finish class and everything else, and then go in at midnight into the News Gazette and work on the agate page. And I actually, they were kind of, I think Jeff D'Alessio was the basketball reporter at the time, and he was out of town for something, and so Bob Osmussen had to cover a couple basketball games, and he needed somebody to help him, so I went along and did that, and Bob dragged me along and let me even, you know, I got to interview Roy Hairston of Purdue in the hallway outside the locker room afterwards, and I just kind of got a taste for all of this. So Bob Osmussen has been fantastic. He has been the guy who opened the door for me to be able to do this. I don't know if he ever directly had a conversation with the people at the school since he knew me back in 1995. But he always kept up with me. I would run into him at Illini games like 2003, and he'd always ask about my family and how things are going and this and that. Anytime I see Bob, he was always so welcoming. And then when he saw me in Rantoul, he was very like, come over here, help interview, this type of thing. So Bob really opened the door for me, and I can never repay him, ever. He was fantastic. And so it just kind of grew from that, that Bob gave me credibility, and I started doing some interviews, and I started doing this type of thing, and they let me, you know, build to the point where I have a press pass. Lauren calls me, what does he call me? The lion's eye guy, the lion guy, I think he's what he calls me, the lion's eye guy. Anyway, anytime I see him, so at the spring game, you have to understand how fantastic this is for me, okay? We're talking about Lauren Tate, who's been covering this team for 45 years and knows more about the Illini than any human being on earth. And for the spring game this year, and I don't want to sound arrogant when I say this, he saw me down in the front row and he came down to sit down with me. Because he likes talking like stats, and he knows, like, that's Lauren's thing with me, is like, he knows I have this like memory of all things Illini the last 20 years and this and that. So Lauren came down to the front row of the press row and sat with me and just chatted the whole game. He did the Cardinal game in one ear and his earbuds, and Lauren can multitask like no human being on earth. So what is that like for me? It's fantastic. Is it fun? I cannot emphasize how fun it is to have Lauren Tate want to come sit and talk Illinois football with me, to have Martin O'Donnell come sit down with me during the games and chat back and forth as I sit in a press box and people say hi to me and accept me that I'm there, even though I'm this guy really not making money to be there. I still haven't taken a single dime personally from the site. I've just repaid expenses. You know, for them to accept me as just some guy who's going to go to his job on Monday back in St. Louis and then turn back around and come back to Champaign on Thursday night for a basketball game and sit on press row. Everybody's been great. And it's been so much fun. So, you know, how does everyone treat me? It's been fantastic. It really, really has. Again, I'm just a guy. I'm just some dude who started writing. I still kind of fall into that category of, you know, I'm not part of any news agency. I'm not any type of anything. It's just I've worked really hard for 5 years and taken when my wife goes to bed, I take every ounce of free time I have and I try and pour it into the site, and it's fun for me, and it's exhausting, and I'm sometimes up till 3 and getting up for work at 6, and it's crazy, but it's a lot of fun. And then when I get to go to games and sit in the press box and everything else, it's fantastic. So I hope that answers your question. Yes, it's fun for me. It is a lot of fun, and I'm excited to where this can go. I'm excited to how I can do more. I'm excited of... you know, ways I can kind of organize my time. And John and I already have some other things planned starting this fall and everything else. So we'll get to that this summer, but yes, it's fantastic. The coaches are really open to me. They've been great. I can't say anybody hasn't been great. So it's been fantastic. So hope that answers your question. I know a lot of people have asked me that all the time, so I'm glad to get it out there to everyone that yes, it's, I am blessed, man. It is fantastic. So that's it. This is the We Love No Other for tonight, which is just me rambling on with your mailbag questions, and I'm going to get to more of them this week and then hopefully get out of this mailbag rut and do some other things as we approach the summer and then line up football. So thank you for listening. Go Lions.